Investors shake off some coronavirus fears as the World Health Organization decides whether the outbreak poses a global risk. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Stocks in Asia were broadly higher today, though the ongoing concern about the coronavirus is the risk of spreading it. Investors in Asia are trying to work out how the outbreak could impact the economic boost that usually comes with the upcoming Lunar New Year holiday. The BBC's Karishma Vaswani reports.
Asian markets initially slumped this morning on worries that the new Chinese virus had the potential to turn into a global pandemic, reigniting memories of the SARS virus in 2003. But they later recovered on official comments from China about how authorities are planning to manage and contain the spread of the disease. One Chinese medical expert has said it's unlikely that the scale of this new crisis could be as widespread as SARS. Still, fears about the potential economic impact are worrying investors. Tourism and travel sectors are most likely to be affected. Businesses are also reassessing whether they need to limit or ban travel to China altogether. Airlines are taking precautionary measures. Hong Kong's flag carrier Cathay Pacific is allowing its staff to wear surgical masks while working on China-bound flights. The worries are likely to continue over the Lunar New Year period when millions of Chinese travel home for the holidays. In Singapore, I'm the BBC's Karishma Vaswani for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. European markets are following their Asia counterparts higher. Meanwhile, the head of the OECD urged the UK to hold fire on a tax on big tech companies planned for April. He warned about the risk of a, quote, mess if there's not global agreement on the levy. Seen any good shows lately? If so, Netflix certainly hopes you're watching on its platform. That's because there's growing concern about the company's slowing subscriber growth. But Tom Harrington, head of research at Ender's Analysis, says despite the slowdown, much of the company's expansion comes from international markets.
As the growth is outside the US, they're making original shows in other markets. They're making them in South America and Korea. Massive spending in the UK, over $500 million.
Are they as strong in international markets? Are they as competitive on price as they are in the US?
It depends on which market you're talking about. In some markets, they're not as competitive on price. So in Southeast Asia, for example, they have services which are half the price. In others, they are the leaders. So in the UK, you know, they're very competitive on price. It's definitely a market-to-market play for them. But it's also the user experience. They're spending more money on tech than anybody else. So it just works better. They're on more devices. They have better carriage deals with pay TV platforms. So, you know, their app is right in front of you when you turn on your television.
And when it comes to other competitors, for example, Disney, they just announced this week that Disney Plus will launch in March. How big of a threat is Disney on this side of the pond or in other international markets? Is there the same kind of nostalgia that makes people want to subscribe to that service as opposed to maybe Netflix?
I think there's space for both of those, two massive services, two massive libraries of very high quality. Disney Plus is sort of aimed at more of a family market. There is differentiation there. It's probably the other services that don't sort of have that differentiation that'll struggle a little bit more.
Streaming wars seemingly just heating up. Tom Harrington, head of research at Ender's Analysis. Thank you.
Thanks.
After decades of civil war, corruption, and isolation, a new leader is trying to shake up one of Africa's sleeping giants. But with a fresh corruption scandal this month, the BBC's Andrew Harding asks whether Angola is really on the mend.
I'm sitting by the water's edge here in the center of Luanda, looking out across the bay, and it's hard to imagine a more revealing panorama in all of Africa. Behind me are the half-finished skyscrapers, testament to this country's fading oil boom. In front of me, there's a marina packed with hundreds of millions of dollars worth of luxury yachts.
In Angola, only the politicians can afford those kinds of yachts.
With me here on the waterfront is the anti-corruption activist Rafael Marquez.
It has not only become endemic corruption, but the way of life.
The fact that people are speaking out is a sign of how much this famously isolated, authoritarian country is suddenly trying to change. The man responsible for the new mood is President João Lourenço, being sworn in here. He stunned many Angolans by quickly turning against the family of his predecessor, Eduardo dos Santos.
Começamos com uma nota da PGR, acabada de chegar à nossa...
The latest shock, state television announcing that dos Santos's daughter Isabel, known as the richest woman in Africa, is having her accounts and assets frozen after being accused of cheating the state of over $1 billion. She insists she's innocent. So what's going on here? Is Angola really serious about fighting corruption, or is one alleged kleptocracy simply being replaced by another?
My sense is this is a country trying to transform itself, and a combination of oil price crash and then change of leadership has really driven them, I think, to reassess their situation.
This is Jessica Hand, the British ambassador to Angola.
When you look at the way that other African countries have changed over the last 15, 20 years, Angola has been left behind. I think they're very conscious of that.
Sunset and the fancy bars by the marina prepare to welcome back Angola's wealthy elites. But this is a country braced for change, an African giant struggling to build a fairer future.
In Luanda, Angola, I'm the BBC's Andrew Harding for Marketplace.
And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.